Hello, what's up everybody? Jack Farr here from Farr's Views podcast on a very dreary Monday, the 4th of September. We are episode 13, unfortunately still in the midst of the international break, which is obviously a massive pain in the arse, but obviously we're going to try and power through and get through to the weekend. Talking about the weekend, funnily enough, I actually move in to Wembley, northwest London. I'm into my halls at Grand Felder House at UCFB, University and Colleges of Football Business. That I'm even there on Saturday to start my degree in International Football Business. I just kind of wanted to touch on that very, very quickly. This podcast in particular will be certainly more aimed at transfer deadline day. Mainly because obviously plenty happened and I said that I would cover it this week. I was going to do kind of a quote unquote special one-off bonus episode during the week, but I thought, to be honest with you, apart from only a couple of little kind of tidbits of things that have happened, the only thing I really, really want to talk about are the confirmed transfers and where we're going, and also there's a lot to get through, so I don't want to do an hour and a half podcast where 45 minutes of that will be about transfers and the rest will be about me. Just wanted to talk very quickly about starting my degree and the power of this new venture and this new facility that not just I, but obviously everybody else has to take advantage of. Sport is a forever growing industry. I mean, that much is certainly very clear. Football in particular is massive. The biggest brand in football is Manchester United. I believe it's $1.3 billion or $1.2 billion dollars or pounds in terms of the brand value. And I remember my first taster lecture, as I went on to one of the taster days at UCFB, and they were talking about how Sainsbury's, the supermarkets, is just in the UK. Keep that in mind, it's just in the UK. They don't have Sainsbury's in Vietnam or Egypt. The Sainsbury's is just in the UK, and the brand value, if you were to buy, you know, all of Sainsbury's, I think it would be around 6.8 billion. So the biggest brand and the biggest quote-unquote powerhouse in world football, where everyone talks about how everything's way too expensive, players' wages, transfer fees, this, and this. Well, if you were to buy the biggest of all the brands in the sport of football, which is Manchester United, it really does pale in comparison to a national supermarket. And that, I think, tells you what the untapped potential of sport and of franchises, to use the American term, is going forward. And the thing I really wanted to talk about was how what it would seem is that there's somewhat of an old boys club at the very upper echelons of football at the moment. So certainly across boardrooms, you know, big people making the big decisions. If you look at the, gap between what they have done and then football, which is what they've ended up doing, whilst what they have done gives them, you know, some superb knowledge and experience in facing football, it's not tailored to it, and there's a certain level of learning on the job which that these higher ups really have to do throughout their time there. And I think what this will do, these kind of degrees that are being offered by this university and other universities as well, is you're really kind of bridging the gap, and you're having people who will be able to do these jobs at a much higher level a lot sooner. So the whole old boys club thing I mentioned, the old fashioned thing about how if somebody was good at some form of business, then just throw them in another industry, a rapidly growing industry, they'll do fine and they'll survive. There are a few examples where that isn't the case, and it's actually taken significantly longer to reach a stage where you can look at your role and look at your performance in your role and go, oh, you know what, I'm doing a pretty good job. Daniel Levy is a very good example of that. I think I recall his history. I've just got a whole, I'll get it up here. for you, just to kind of try and prove my point somewhat. So Daniel Levy, who is of course the chairman of of Spurs, his initial position within within the world as a worker, he's just to say he's 55 at the moment. I came from the University of Cambridge, so he's a very accomplished man and a very accomplished brain. But he was known for ENIC International Limited, which is an investment company. They do sports, entertainment, and media. And then obviously that, then he's 55 now, and he replaced obviously Lord Sugar as the chairman of Tottenham in 2011, after the company he was working for, ENIC International, bought a controlling stake in the club. He worked previously as a director of Scottish football at Rangers, yet again, which this ENIC had a significant stake in. And you know, this company that he was a part of, I'm just reading here, also had AEK Athens, Slavia Prague, and Vicenza, as well as non-football companies such as Warner Brothers and Autonomy. So it really does kind of show you that, actually, reading up on it a little bit more, there is actually somewhat of a background within football. But what I would say initially is that for somebody who has come through a superb education system, certainly coming through Cambridge is nothing to shout about. What he would have had to do throughout his time is work his way up and build and understand the industry, as opposed to just jumping straight in with all the relevant knowledge. And obviously the problem is that I think you'll find, and Daniel Levy I'm using as a positive example, because he has shown that since his takeover as his role, he's learnt a great deal and has now put Tottenham in a superb position financially, in footballing terms as well. He's well regarded. They always have a superb transfer window in terms of the amount of money they make and the players they bring in to replace. And if I'm being totally honest with you, I know lots of people have said that Spurs have not had a very good transfer window. I would tend to disagree, if I'm totally honest. I'm certainly of the opinion that, really, apart from maybe replacing a departing Kyle Walker, and maybe next season or in January, replacing Danny Rose and any other players who may want to leave, obviously you cross that bridge when you come to it, that bringing in Serge Aurier, and of course I'll get to this a little later on, but bringing him in is a very good direct replacement. And the other players that they've brought in are good players who they haven't spent a ridiculous amount of money on, who they know that the chances of them flopping and failing are quite slim based on their previous purchasing history. So what's really happened here is you've seen a character in Daniel Levy get into a role, embrace the role, and develop and learn from the role. But of course, we see Spurs in the state they're in now, and that's after 16, 17 years of work that he's had to put in. Now, I think what you see a lot of the time is, based on their older faces, there is a little bit of a generation gap, I think that's fair to say. And within that generation gap, of course, comes some negatives, certainly looking at a naivety from the younger generations when a certain decision or a certain deal isn't made, not just regarding the transfer market, but regarding other such things. And you know, young people will say, well, here's what we want to do and here's what we want to do, and maybe an older hand will look at that and go, well, it's a little bit rash, I don't know how I feel, I don't know how I feel about that, let's do some market research, let's weigh up our options and then make a decision. And I think the conception of it is that you're looking at it as, it's just old, it's fuddy-duddy, I don't like it, why can't we be forward-thinking, young, and going for it? And I think what will happen with these courses as professionals that are trained within the industry start to come through, you'll start to see the level increase quite a lot, actually. And fingers crossed this will only go to Britain. But no doubt, the eagle-eyed folk from abroad will also snare this kind of talent as well. But what you would hope for is that instead of the owner of Sports Direct owning and running a company, who of course is a businessman and that's fair, but does he know his industry? And, you know, yeah, again, just another example, what you may get going forward is people who know exactly what they're doing from the get-go and can then have careers, not that they just start in their 50s, 60s or whenever, but actually even younger, potentially in their 30s. And I do think we'll see a massive, massive transition on the way that football clubs handle their business over the next 30, 40 years or so, as this does grow as a movement and as these trained professionals get better and better and greater exposure into the industry. So I just wanted to talk about that very, very quickly and, you know, give Daniel Levy as an example of a positive example. I honestly don't know why I brought him up, but I think it just shows that you can learn your ways, but a lot of the time the conception is that they're, and certainly at Arsenal now, speak to any Arsenal fan, and, you know, I know these are owners, not necessarily major decision makers, but Stan Kroenke, even Gazidis, all these kind of guys, you look at and you think, you know, do you actually know what you're doing within the industry, or are you kind of picking it up as it goes along, so to speak? But yes, just wanted to touch on that very, very quickly. And then also, second of all, just say, I want to talk about Wayne Rooney as well. I don't know what the specifics are really of what happened. You only get the kind of juicy bits that sell newspapers and make you click on websites. But if we look at, I mean, you know, you've got the Sun here. Will Wayne and Colleen get divorced? Rooney could face losing half of his 80 million fortune if he ends up, you know, there's a bunch of crazy stuff here. And I know I'm rambling here at the moment. Fight to save his marriage. First of all, what are you doing? It's an international break. And funnily enough, the world is clamoring for something to talk about that's not international football. So if you give people an excuse to do that kind of thing, then you're going to be in so much trouble. You know, if something truly distracting and, you know, and truly entertaining and exciting was going on, this may go under the radar somewhat. But he's picked a time to do this. I suppose you'd call this. He's due to appear in court and in Stockport later this month. He's been charged with drink driving at 2 a.m. Driving over the prescribed limit, and that's going to happen later on. So, like I say, I know I'm kind of rambling with this a little bit, but what are you doing? I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm guessing it doesn't say it in this article, but I'm guessing that this was the case, that there was some girl in the car, and this has sparked rumours about maybe he's having an affair, or maybe it was a one-night stand or something. But I don't understand how, in a time where the mindset of fans and media alike are changing on Rooney somewhat, let's be fair, I never think that pundits were ever down on Rooney. I think pundits always had a very, very deep-rooted respect for Rooney and what he's achieved. But fans certainly were always very negative on him, even though, you know, all the stuff that he's kind of achieved with England and Manchester United. And there was a slight turnaround. You know, he scored a couple goals for Everton, and I think everyone kind of thought, actually, he's not over the hill. He's still really, really, really good. He needs a bit of time, and maybe we need to lay off him a bit, give him a bit more respect. And now he's been charged with drink driving. So I think it's dumb as hell. I don't have a great deal of sympathy for him. I don't know what the fuck he thinks he's doing. And you know, if these off the field issues get worse and worse, if that comes to a divorce and him losing a bunch of money and doing this, we could see a real breakdown of a character here, which would be a real shame. But unfortunately, I don't have any sympathy for him. You can't do that. I don't know what you think you're what you think you're playing at. And like I say, what's I think the main shame about it all is there was this change in mindset, and now it's just gone straight back to him being a bit of a fool and a bit of an idiot. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. I know that's been all over the news, and you don't need to hear it from me, especially seeing as my opinion is, I'm sure, much the same as everyone else's. But yeah, so let's get on to the so we're 15 minutes in. I just wanted to get on to the transfers. So we've got a lot to go through, which is why I'm kind of stopping talking about UCFB and Rooney, you know, within a short period of time. And it is a long, long list. And then there's a couple of statistics that I just wanted to throw out there just to may pique some people's interest, did a little bit of digging and a bit of research. So first and foremost, we have Gregor Krakowiak, who's gone from Paris Saint-Germain to West Bromwich Albion on loan. Yet again, this is another kind of rub your eyes moment for me, seeing players like Krakowiak go to teams like West Brom. It just always is a little bit baffling. This is no doubt for him to get a move away from PSG. I don't think he's very happy there at the moment, even though Unai Emery is still there and brought him in, and obviously he was with Unai Emery before at Sevilla. Yeah, it's still another crazy look at this kind of, you know, what the fuck's kind of happened here. But he'll slot straight into that West Brom team. You've got a big, powerful, experienced international in there. And, you know, unfortunately, teams going to play Tony Pulis, it's going to be even harder to play them now with Krakowiak in the ranks at West Brom. Next, we have Jordi Klaassi, has gone on loan from Southampton to Club Bruges. I'm really disappointed in this. I really like Jordi Klaassi. I think he's a really talented, very, very good player. And it genuinely surprises me that he didn't just hit the ground running with Southampton. I know he kind of went in and out of the squad. Naturally, I don't know what he's like as a human being, and I don't know what kind of part that may have to play, but it surprises me that you've now got a player of what I would have thought his quality would be move on loan from Southampton to Club Bruges. I mean, that's a very average move from an average team to another pretty average team. Naturally, bit of a step down, really. Saints is definitely a better club than Club Bruges. Next is Patrick Schick has gone from Sampdoria to Roma on loan. This is a really good deal, in my opinion. He's an incredibly talented player. Was so good at Sampdoria last year, I can't even tell you. There was a move fell through for Schick to move from Sampdoria to Juventus, and I'm not entirely sure why that is. So I think Roma have kind of pounced on him. And if he has a good year and enjoys himself, maybe come the end of the year, there'll be a change in his thought process and maybe he'll go to Roma instead of Juventus. As a Roma fan myself, that would make me very happy. And, you know, there's a certain bittersweet nature to a loan deal. But if he does do really, really well, it's an incredibly exciting transfer, but certainly one to watch for Patrick Schick there. Next, we have Jeremy Tolihan, who has moved from Hoffenheim to Borussia Dortmund. I've put these two kind of together. So Tolihan has moved from Hoffenheim to Dortmund for 4.5 million. He's young, young-ish, I guess you'd say, you know, kind of in just entering his mid-20s now. He's very talented, very consistent, very good professional. But what this has allowed Borussia Dortmund to do is they have a young fullback called Felix, I want to say this right, Pasalak, who's now gone on loan to Hoffenheim, which would surely have been part of the deal. Felix Pasalak has the higher ceiling and the higher potential going forward, but I think for the short term they've got Tolihan in just as a little bit of cover, and if Felix Pasalak plays really, really well, then he'll come straight into the team and those two will be rotated. Obviously, Lukas Piszczek is slowly going off the end of his career. He's not as buccaneering as he used to be. He's getting a little bit older now, has to kind of develop and change his game. But yeah, I think this is a really smart deal, and it just proves again that Borussia Dortmund, now Monaco as well, are both showing how very, very strong they are in the transfer market. Even though they lose their best players, they're still very, very capable of doing superb deals, really good value for money deals to invest in the club in other areas, and I think that's, you know, really admirable. Ayman Abdennour has moved from Valencia to Marseille on loan. Marseille needed a bit of cover at the position. Valencia had a few centre-backs. it's a very reasonable, common sense deal. Yet again, another loan. Juan, I don't know if this is being pronounced correctly. Juan Foyth, from Estudiantes to Tottenham Hotspur. So £9 million. It's a 6-year deal, which I always think are outrageously long. If I was a professional footballer, which of course I'm not, I personally wouldn't be signing anything longer than a 3-year, 4-year deal tops. But 3-year deals for me, I think suit very, very well. It's a good chunk of time, a good period of time. So to have a 6-year deal, I mean, that is a very significant proportion of your career that you're kind of quote unquote committing to there. My only take from that is the Tottenham scouts, which are of very good quality. I mean, lots of the signings that they do make are very obvious in terms of you don't really need to be much of a scout to see how good Davinson Sanchez is. You don't need to be a great scout to see how good Toby Alderweireld is. You don't need to be a good scout to see how good Christian Eriksen is, etc., etc. But Dele Alli, you start to see where I'm going. There are certain players where you will look at them. Certainly Harry Kane coming through as well. There's certainly been somebody's had a look at the situation and gone, here the time is now. So the scouts must have seen something that they like. Let's see how it goes. I honestly don't know a great deal about the player. Emre Moore has moved from Dortmund to Celta Vigo for £11.7 million. I know certainly after the Euros, Emre Moore looked really, really good and really lively. Clearly hasn't worked out for him as well as he thought it would. So he's moved to Celta Vigo for £11.7 million. To me, Celta Vigo have got a really good deal there. If the player can obviously get back to the way he was playing beforehand, a player of that quality, certainly come the end of the Euros, you thought, oh, this is going to be a £35-40 million, you know, attacking midfielder moving to the Premier League and Spain and all these kind of places, but unfortunately tail off for him. Benedict Taveres has moved from Schalke to Juventus. Not a really, really good deal. Germany are absolutely overloaded with what was considered young talent, which is now talent reaching their peak. And Havertz is certainly in that mould. I would assume that this deal will become permanent come next season. A very good player, moving to a very good defensive team, and he'll just slot right in there. Kevin Campbell has moved from Bayer Leverkusen to Red Bull Leipzig. And in an £18.5 million move, which I think is very interesting, you do wonder whether they were looking at Naby Keita leaving and thinking, right, we do need to reinvest some of this money that we will be getting. You know, it's not there in their account, but they know it will be there next year. So they're kind of taking their opportunities now. Kevin Campbell is a good player. He's a tricky player. He's never going to be considered an elite player, but he will be very central to any success that Leipzig have over the coming year. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has moved from Arsenal to Liverpool for £35 million. I've got a couple of things to say on this. I don't want to dwell on it too much. All you have to do is go on Twitter and search Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and you'll get the opinions of everybody, whether you like it or not. One thing that I do know is that he was offered 180k a week to stay at Arsenal, and he's moved for 125k a week. And I don't want to start ranting about how football players get paid what they deserve and what is a fair reflection of their ability and how needed they are. It's I know, trust me, the difference between 125k and 180k wouldn't bother me too much if you were offering me one or the other. However, I still think it's very admirable that he had the choice to go to the Champions of England and instead chose to go elsewhere because maybe he would enjoy playing for the coach a little bit better, enjoys the style of play, his position, etc., etc. Footballing reasons, not just money reasons. I'm always well behind that. It'll be, in my opinion, he'll be a natural successor to Milner. And people always kind of, well, you know, what the fuck are you talking about? James Milner can honestly play holding midfield, central midfield, attacking midfield, wing, either wing, left fullback, right fullback. If you really wanted him to, I'm pretty sure James Milner could play everywhere on the field apart from centre back and in goal. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is much the same. Could Ox probably play up front? I would think so. Wing, attack midfield, holding midfield, centre midfield, fullback. Yeah. So I honestly believe this will end up being the upgrade on James Milner, who will slowly be kind of fading out in his career. Milner, who's been a fantastic professional for a number of years at a bunch of clubs, and, you know, good for him. But yes, £35 million for an England international, you know, another tick on the amount of English players that you have to fulfil when submitting a Premier League squad. I think it's a pretty good deal all round. I said in a previous video that they needed to sign Oxlade-Chamberlain up to a newer deal, and I know I spoke about this last week, but Arsene Wenger, it honestly does seem as though all these players were rejecting these new contracts, and as time was going by, he thought, oh, they'll sign him eventually, and obviously that hasn't happened. And you know, it's not smart from him to have assumed this. You know, what's the old saying? You know, to assume makes an ass out of you and me. And I think he's certainly been proven, that theory has been proven right. Next, Serge Aurier has moved for £23 million from PSG to Spurs. Dangerously underpriced. If you see Benjamin Mendy going for 50 mil, Serge Aurier for 23 mil is dangerously underpriced. We know why that is, of course. He's got the bad boy image. Homophobic, you know, he called Laurent Blanc a faggot, I think, and speaking to any gay people I've ever been around, faggot is honestly one of the worst and most derogatory things you can say to somebody of that sexual orientation. So yeah, you've got a player with some serious off the field issues, you would assume, and you know, all these kind of negatives going alongside him. But you also have one of the most outrageous athletes going. You have a serious character to come into the dressing room. And in my opinion, Serge Aurier as a footballer is better than Kyle Walker. So actually it's an upgrade. You sell Kyle Walker for 45, 50 mil, and you bring in a player for half the price who's actually better, as long as you can keep him on track. I would personally say that's a risk worth taking. The one thing that did surprise me about this deal, I honestly thought Aurier would be at Chelsea come the end of the window. But one thing that does surprise me is one of the first few things that Pochettino did when he came into Chelsea is he got rid of any quote-unquote bad blood and people who didn't train properly, who didn't work hard, who didn't do this, who didn't do this. So the likes of Bentaleb, Nasser Chadli, trying to think of a couple other examples, maybe Roberto Soldado, you know, there's a bunch of players, Lamella we're seeing this with somewhat now. If any player doesn't match the mindset and the mentality that Mauricio Pochettino wants in his team, then they are gone. So to then sign a player like this, it could potentially be a very short career for a short Spurs career for Serge Aurier at Tottenham. But if he gets his head down and works right, this could be the best signing of the summer. And I know that's a bold statement, but it's true. Next, one that makes me, I don't know whether to laugh or cry, Renato Sanchez, the 18-year-old wonder kid of Euro 2016, moved from Bayern Munich to Swansea City on loan. I know it's only a loan, so it's not the most spectacular deal ever. He's 20 now. I watched him play for Portugal in Marseille during the Euros in the semis. And my goodness, is he a ridiculously good player. It was foolish of him to move to Bayern Munich instead of Manchester United. His career would have progressed significantly more on a personal level. He would have grown a lot more as a player if he'd moved to United as opposed to Bayern, and now we're seeing the backlash of that poor decision by him. Yet again, it's not the end of the world. He's 20, so he can still come back from this. Good for Swansea. My one worry is that they're expecting a 20-year-old kid who is superbly talented to do what Gylfi Sigurdsson did for them last year, and I'm sure he's very capable of that. But when you are 20 and you move to Wales and you've got all this kind of pressure on you, it may not work out the best way. But yes, the headline is, how the fuck has this happened? And good for both teams for getting the deal done. I'm impressed. Next, Naki Wells has moved from Huddersfield to Burnley for 5 mil. This one's very, very simple. Burnley are obviously very, very worried after losing Andre Gray. So they signed Chris Wood, and now they've got Naki Wells just as a little backup. Proven goal scorer, not at Premier League level, but a proven goal scorer nonetheless. That's for 5 million. Divock Origi has moved from Liverpool to Wolfsburg on loan. this will be the end of Divock Origi's career at Liverpool, in my humble opinion. I think he'll have an average year at Wolfsburg where he'll get a couple of goals, he'll do okay, and then next year we'll find that he's moved to some Liga or Spanish club. He hasn't progressed as he would maybe have been expected to at Liverpool, in part and probably mainly due to the fact that he wasn't given the chances that I'm sure he was promised initially. Next, Mbai Niang has moved from Milan to Torino on loan. Yet again, another loan deal. Lots and lots of loan deals this summer. Yeah, good signing. He's very, very good. I watched a lot of Torino last year because I fucking love Andrea Belotti. And I think he'll work really, really well in Torino, working there. He's much more athletic than what they've got at the moment, which I think may give them a certain edge, even though I don't think it will change their play style at all. But yeah, Mbai Niang from Milan to Torino. Kylian Mbappe has gone on from Monaco to PSG on loan. I think that PSG shit themselves about financial fair play, and they've got him on loan, and they'll buy him permanently. I think that's what's going on. There's a, I don't know what the phrasing is, like a need to buy or an agreement to buy at the end of the, like, compulsory, but some sort of fee at the end. So yeah, that's turning into a really, really scary PSG team. In European competitions, I would still make the point that if the biggest names that PSG play on a week-by-week basis, that when Real Madrid come to town, it's going to be a real shock to their system, and I still think that they will struggle. Naturally, there are positives that because they don't play as much football or necessarily work as hard as some of the other leagues do, that they're fitter for when those games come. But I would still make the point that when the big boys really do come to play, it's a real, real step up, and they're not going to be ready for it. But yes, Kylian Mbappe on loan from Monaco to PSG. Lucas Perez has gone from Arsenal to Deportivo La Coruña on loan as well. Yeah, he shouldn't have moved to Arsenal in the first place. I could have fucking told you that. Yeah, good for him for getting out of there. Nikola Vlasic has moved from Hajduk Split to Everton for £9 million. No idea who the player is. Haven't even really researched them. I would assume that they are a striker. Ronald Koeman was talking about his need for a striker, and obviously the rumours about Diego Costa kind of came up. But yes, he needed some backup in that position, even though he has quite a few strikers now. Gabigol has moved on loan from Inter Milan to Benfica. Tough one, that one. I think he'll get a lot more game time at Benfica. Because, and I'll reference this in a minute, but Kostas Mitroglou has moved from Benfica to Marseille for $13.8 million. So I think that Gabigol will now be the main man at Benfica now, and he should thrive under those conditions. You know, this is a player that could potentially really, you know, really hit the heights, and we could really be talking about in a very positive way in the future. But unfortunately, Mario Icardi is fucking good at football and will be leading the line for Inter for a very long time until his release clause is met. Next summer. Next is Davide Zappacosta, 25.8 million pound deal from Torino to Chelsea. Couple people asking me about him and what he's like. I did watch a lot of Torino last year whenever they were on my TV and BT Sport. I would watch them. I'm fucking in love with Andrea Belotti, and I did like watching Joe Hart be bad. It was very interesting. But yeah, he's a winger, stroke fullback, so he's perfect for that wing-back role. I draw comparisons between Zappacosta and Marcus Alonso in a lot of ways. So it's not the most athletic, physically gifted player going, but in terms of crossing and technically delivering a football, really, really high standard. And certainly when you've got Morata and, you know, Bakayoko now, and Rudiger, Cahill, David Luiz, you've got these guys who can attack the ball from wide areas. You know, granted, all three centre-backs won't be in the box all the time, but certainly when looking at Morata, just as a prime example, he scored a lot of headers already this year. This guy will just add straight to that, and obviously you do worry about the future of Victor Moses as well. Alexander Dragovic has moved from Bayer Leverkusen to Leicester City on loan. Partnered with Maguire, that's a really, really strong centre-back partnership at Leicester. And, you know, if he has success there and he likes Leicester, then he'll either move to Leicester permanently next year, or much like we saw with Alderweireld when he went to Saints, he may move to a bigger club. Dragovic really is one of these kind of FIFA career mode, football manager, high potential centre-backs, but he genuinely in real life is very athletic, very strong, very uncompromising, certainly when it comes to his tackling. And I think this could be really strong for Leicester. You know, Leicester quietly have made some really, really good signings. Next, Tim Krul, another loan from Newcastle to Brighton. They want just a bit of Premier League experience in the goalkeeping core there, and that's fair enough. As I referenced before, Mitroglou, 13.8 mil to Benfica. He's just doing the rounds. You know, he did his Olympiacos, Benfica, Marseille. He was at Fulham for a bit. You know, he's just kind of doing the rounds, but he'll get goals at Marseille. Next, Wilfried Bonny, 12 mil from Man City to Swansea City. I can't believe it's taken him this long to get back to Swansea or to get away from Manchester City. When he signed for Manchester City, I thought, what the fuck are you doing? Are you really going to compete with Sergio Aguero? Of course you're fucking not. So, you know, 12 mil though, good for Swansea. I think they've signed him back for a fraction of the price that they sold him for. And he'll come in, and I would honestly imagine he'll have much the same impact as he did when he was there the first time round. Next, Fernando Llorente, 12 mil from Swansea to Spurs this time. Spurs beat Chelsea to this signing. He's going to get some really good service, and he's going to do what Lukaku's been doing for United so far this year. So against the teams that are lesser teams and very defensive, get a good ball in, he will head it into the goal. It's as simple as that. He's a big, he causes problems in the box, and it's a good deal for Spurs. Just as a side note, this isn't a major transfer, I just find it interesting. Ravel Morrison has moved from Lazio to Atlas, and I just find it very, very interesting that, you know, so this guy came through the Manchester United Academy. Everyone thought he was going to be the next biggest thing in English football. Obviously really kind of dicked about, left Manchester United, went to West Ham, yet again dicked about some more, was playing a couple of games for England, don't know if you guys recall that, then really went to Lazio, he's moved to Atlas FC, I don't even know where that place is. Part of me would really like to see him prove everybody wrong, come back and really show off how good he is, but also part of me just sees him just absolutely crashing and burning. Next, Mamadou Sakho has moved from Liverpool to Crystal Palace for 26 mil. Yes. Mo Sakho is an absolute beast. He's exactly what Crystal Palace need. They've got Jairo Riedewald and Fosu Mensah in there with the likes of Scott Dan and these other guys. What you need is somebody who you kind of take after and have as that real leader at the back. And I think he can do that for Palace. I think for Frank de Boer over the whole summer, that's going to be his most important signing. And at 26 mil current market, that's honestly not too bad, because you would say Sacco's probably going to be reaching the prime of his career, certainly in the next couple of years. Okay, one that's a little tricky to talk about is Danny Drinkwater's moved from Leicester to Chelsea for £35 million. Now, that's a hell of a lot of money. For a player who I would consider to be incredibly average. Danny Drinkwater came through Manchester United's youth academy and is a neat and tidy central midfielder. And to me, he is just that. He is a Mark Noble, a Tom Carroll, a Harry Winks, James Ward-Prowse has got a bit more about him. But he really is, to me, a receive-it-and-pass-it central midfielder. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's very easy when you have a lot of time on the ball to get it and pass it and not really have much of an effect on the game from a key pass, an assist, a goal standpoint. And yes, I know in that one year he had an incredibly good year with Jamie Vardy, but that's not going to be the same way at Chelsea. It's a totally different animal. I think Chelsea have drastically overpaid here. I think they lost Matic because they did Matic a favour because he wanted to leave. Bakayoko, I think, was a good signing. And I think they wanted somebody else that wasn't Drinkwater. And now that they've signed him, I think it's a real mistake. I think he'll do just fine. But 35 mil for Danny Drinkwater, yeah, just not for me what I think would, what I would consider a good value for money signing there. But, you know, who knows? He may prove me wrong. Andreas Pereira has moved from Manchester United to Valencia on loan. I'm disappointed because I wanted to see him play in the team this year. I think he'd have a lot of fun with the players United have currently got around him. And I think all that's going to happen next year or even in January is United are going to sign Griezmann and there's going to be even less space in the team for Pereira and he'll move on, which I think is a real shame because especially as a youth academy player, he's very, very talented, very, very good. And I think that he'll, you know, just kind of go off into the distance now. I certainly hope that's not the case. But yeah, he's moved to Valencia. It's a step up from the team he was at last year, which I think was either Getafe, was it? Or, ooh, fuck, where was he last year? Sorry, I have to get this or else I'll be annoyed with myself. Shit, bear with me a second. Sorry about this. So he spent a year on loan at Granada, that was it. So he was on Granada and he was their player of the year. He's now moved to Valencia, so it's a step up in terms of the talent that's going to be playing around him. And I think that shows, you know, really, really positive, things as well. You know, he's a Brazilian and he's a national team player at every single age, and I'm sure he'll make it into an international level as well. But yeah. You know, Valencia have got a good player. Let's just hope they play him. And a penultimate deal that I thought was worth mentioning, Nordin Amrabat has gone from Watford to Leganes on loan, another loan deal. Clearly just not cutting it at Watford. And I think, you know, that will be maybe the end of him. I don't think he'll be coming back. And the last one, just kind of a funny one. Loic Remy has been released by Chelsea. Ha ha ha. Why the fuck did he go to Chelsea in the first place? Ugh. Anyway, so that's kind of all the kind of main, not all deadline day deals, some were a few days before, but I just wanted to make sure we were truly covered because obviously now until January, the podcast will not be filled with confirmed transfers as part of the segment of the podcast. So the last couple of things I did want to kind of finish with, how are we doing for time? 42 minutes. So the last couple of things I did want to just talk about were just a couple of statistics and things, did a little bit of digging, did a little bit of calculatoring. In total, in Europe's top five leagues, there were a total of 1,687 transfer dealings, including loans. And that does seem quite a lot. I mean, don't get me wrong, I know that really does kind of make sense if you look at all the teams and all the total deals, and obviously you have to combine the ins and outs as well, not just the players coming into teams, the players leaving teams as well, and I just think that's massive. But yeah, maybe to be expected. I don't know what the previous windows were. Amount spent across Europe's top five leagues, 3.98 billion, so a really, really on the brink of 4 billion there. And here was just how it broke down. So out of the 1,687 transfers, the Premier League had 475 of them, which is 40% of the total transfer dealings there. No, that's definitely not right. Oh, excuse me, that was the spending, excuse me. So in terms of total deals, Premier League had 475. Serie A had 445. Liga had 369. Spanish La Liga had 328. And the Bundesliga had 275, which is, of course, significantly less than the Premier League and Serie A at the top there. In terms of money and spending, surprise, surprise, the Premier League spent 1.62 billion on player transfers. Serie A and the Spanish League shared 1.03 billion, so both still over the billion mark. Liga had 932.8 million in terms of spending, and the Bundesliga bottom again with only 720.9 million spent. So the that statistic I messed up a moment ago in terms of the total spending of 3.98 billion. 40% of that spending, 40%, has been covered by the Premier League. So the Premier League's covered the vast majority of that spending, and you can see there that, you know, it's nearly double of what the French league spent. It's more than double of what the Bundesliga spent, and obviously it's still about 600 million more than the Spanish and the Italian league spent. So 40% of the spendings in the top five leagues went to Britain and the English Premier League. And the Bundesliga, in terms of the total transfers made, and this is that they were the bottom in both categories for the Bundesliga, which I just found very interesting. In terms of the total transfers in the top five leagues, the Bundesliga made 16.3% of all of those. And I just, you know, that is of great interest to me. The lowest amount spent and the lowest total of transfers actually made are, I found personally, of great interest. But yes, anyway, that was kind of my roundup of the transfers. As we start really getting into the season now, we can kind of assess the way in which teams are playing, bring you any news that maybe people aren't talking about as much as maybe they should be throughout the year, and you know, really get to grips with the state of the Premier League. Now that the window is finished, next week, when I'm in my first year at university, I will go through my revised predictions table. Now that the transfer window has finished and I can see the state of all the squads, I can kind of make my mind up as to what who's going to finish where and why. And yeah, then moving on, it will just be a case of breaking down the news, bringing you the news, discussing the news, and hopefully getting some guests on that I meet along the way from my time at university, and maybe some updates there as well. Thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate it. Please give me a subscribe on iTunes. And you know, a 5-star review is always very, very helpful. When I tweet my podcast out, give me a retweet, give me a like, give me a favorite. I'm always looking for any constructive criticism going forward, and also any just positive feedback that you want to give me. If you like the way things are going, you know, even though we're 13 episodes in now, this is still a work in progress. You'd be surprised to hear it's me. I'm in a guest bedroom of my parents' house. This is one take. There's no editing. It is just me. And yes, like, subscribe, share. And peace out. I'll see you when I'm back at school. Thanks for listening.